Hi, everyone. It's Matthew. Welcome to another Brand Rounds podcast. You know, we set out on this journey together about 6 weeks ago, and the idea was to equip medical sales distributors to help surgeons grow the business of healthcare. And we were able to provide interviews with best-selling authors, leading surgeons, innovative medical device leaders on the sales and marketing side. And we have arrived at several podcasts today, and the feedback has been so great. It's been messages from distributors and surgeons and medical device companies that go something like this. This is needed. This is unique. There's nothing else like this out there. So we're going to keep bringing great insight to you as long as you want to listen. Today is no exception. James Carberry, who is the founder of Sweet Fish Media. Now, let me tell you, 6 weeks and probably a day or two ago, I read a book. Actually, I saw it everywhere. And the title grabbed my attention. It was called Content-Based Networking. I downloaded it on Kindle. I read it, and I couldn't put it down. I literally read it in one night. That same night, it's like 2:30 in the morning, my wife is elbowing me in the ribs saying, go to bed, go to bed. And I decided to put in action what James had taught me in his book, Content-Based Networking. Well, fast forward to today, and I get to interview him. I think you're going to learn what I did, which is the ability to flip the megaphone towards people other than yourself and get them to share their insight is both impactful and insightful and interesting. So I want you to imagine your ability to flip the megaphone to your busiest surgeons or your orneriest nurses. Help them to share their truth and their unique insights in a way that bring great credit and attention to them, and you will not struggle to be perceived as a practice builder. All right, James, I want you to describe what you do to my Scottish grandparents. Now, in parentheses, I want you to insert Mike Myers' So I Married an Axe Murderer scene. And can you visualize Veen and Cordia? Veen is a 5'8" man who tells me to move my head. It's blocking the TV. And Cordia is all about being a 6'1" Scottish powerhouse. I mean, she could be like on a Netflix documentary. So how would you describe what you do in a way that my Scottish grandparents could understand?
So I've had some evolution in my thinking here. I used to just say, we produce podcasts for companies. And my buddy said, you know, James, I think you could spice that up a little bit. What if you told people that you were the executive producer for business talk shows? And I thought, man, that sounds a lot fancier than, you know, we produce podcasts for B2B brands. So I would say I'm the executive producer for a bunch of different business talk shows.
Yeah, that's great. I think that Cordia would tell you that you're too skinny, come in to eat my child. And then Veen would have you chopping wood. So that'll be perfect. My next question is you and I share a common faith. And I would ask, is there a parable that maybe you have that kind of best explains or even describes your own journey? I know a little bit about your background and your journey leading up to Sweet Fish Media. What would that parable say in a way that allows someone listening to us to find themselves within your own journey?
Man, Matthew, I think I don't know that it's a parable. By the way, have you watched The Chosen yet?
No, tell me more.
Oh, man. So The Chosen is, it's on a platform called VidAngel. And so it's essentially, they're trying to do these 8 to 10 part series of just the story of Jesus. So they're going through the Gospels, and they are the most well done. I mean, it is an incredibly well produced television series based on the life of Jesus. And so in the first season, the first eight episodes, they're covering, you know, the first part of Jesus's ministry, and they're showing kind of how he recruited, so to speak, each of the disciples. And so you see the story of him recruiting Matthew and bringing Peter into the mix. And so that show alone, I mean, it's allowed me to visually see in such a better way what Jesus's life looked like, as opposed to a lot of the, I don't know, a lot of Christian things are just cheesy and not I don't know. It doesn't really engage the way that you know, the way that you would hope that it could. But I would say my first, when you said parable, I instantly went to my favorite verse, and it's what we've shaped our core values around. But it's 1 John 3:18, and it's, you know, little children, let us not love in word or talk, but in deed and truth. And so one of the books that has greatly shaped my life outside of the Bible is Bob Goff's book, Love Does. And just this idea of love being action. So our number one core value is to love people well. And I think that if we can love people really, really well, then that's what God wants from us. He says that, you know, that if I'll know the way you love me by the way you love people. And so I'm a very simple, you know, Oklahoma boy. And so I try to keep it as simple as I can. And I know that if I'm proactively trying to love people well, and like 1 John 3:18 says, love with my action, then I think that I'm going to be well on my way to living a life that honors God.
Yeah, that's well said. I'm definitely going to look up Chosen. And my Bob Goff story is that Sweet Sandy, my wife, and I, we host a community group, and we studied Love Does. And you may know where I'm going with this, James, because in your book, you do the same thing, which is you provide your mobile number. Yep. For those of you who don't know, Bob Goff is this amazing communicator, but he's just a thought provoker. He's just an amazing man. He's got a great book called Love Does, and he leaves his mobile number in the back of the book. So James, my house, Northwest Arkansas, packed with community group members with bad teeth and bad accents, because they're all from Arkansas. And we call up the mobile number, and who answers? This is Bob. And I froze. All I could think of saying was, I defaulted to my Southern upbringing, James, where I'm like, Mr. Goff, you know, when in doubt, from the South, you start off with Mr. Carberry, Mr. Goff, Mr. Scott. You just default to that. And there was a pause. And then I just kind of blurted it out like a puppy going to the bathroom all over himself because he's so excited. I go, we're in a community group in Arkansas. We just finished your book. And sir, we loved it. And then there's a pause, and he goes, so how are you applying it?
Yes.
And he engaged us in conversation. And so when I read your book and I saw that you offered that access, just made me smile. So, James, we're going to pivot from Jesus to the Jazz Lab for those folks that are not, hey, you're the master interviewer. If I'm doing something wrong and pivoting from Jesus to describing the Jazz Lab of Edmond, Oklahoma, I need you to teach me on this podcast. So for those folks that don't know about the Jazz Lab from Edmond, Oklahoma, and I do, because I'm an Arkansas boy and you're an Oklahoma boy, to unpack that for us.
Man, I honestly, I don't know that I've ever stepped foot into the Jazz Lab. I drove by it pretty much every day, going from school to work. But I honestly, I don't think I could tell you a whole lot about the Jazz Lab, even though it was right in my backyard for pretty much 6 years of my life.
Nice. Then tell us about Edmond, Oklahoma.
Yeah. So Edmond is a great little town right outside of Oklahoma City. I went to college there, University of Central Oklahoma. And I really do love that town. It was the town where I bought my first house and in college with some buddies. And yeah, really, you know, have nothing but great things to say about Edmond.
Yeah, that's great. So what made you curious to write your book, Content-Based Networking?
Yeah, so I had a really cool experience back in 2008. My roommate's brother-in-law won a sweepstakes through Alltel. And it was one of those things you see on TV, and it's like you and nine of your friends can win an all-expense trip to a professional football game of your choice, on a private jet, yada, yada, yada. And you're just like, nobody ever actually wins those. Well, fortunately, my roommate's brother-in-law did win it. And he had just moved to Oklahoma. He was new to the area. And so he did not have a lot of friends in the area. So he reached out to his brother-in-law, who is my roommate, and said, hey, get some of your buddies together. We're going to take a private jet to New York City to watch a Giants-Cowboys game. And so my roommate called me. I had just gotten back from Zambia. So I'd literally been living in a hut for 2 months. And my roommate called and said, hey, do you want to take a private jet to New York City? I thought he was kidding, but it turns out he was not. And we got to go on this trip. It was unreal. Barry Sanders was waiting for us as soon as we got off the jet. We had a police escort taking our private tour bus around the city, Times Square and Carnegie Deli and the Empire State Building, all of that fun stuff.
Yeah, and you being an Oklahoma boy and Barry Sanders going to Oklahoma State.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's great.
It was super fun. We ended up running into Barry about 3 months later, actually. We saw him at his son's state championship game. And so we got to reconnect with him there. It was super fun. But regardless, there was a, you know, as we're going through this experience, we're all like pinching ourselves. Like this can't actually be happening. And there was a guy there that I just thought was a representative of Alltel. I didn't really think anything of it, but his name was Jeff. And I instantly, you know, connect with Jeff. We're talking about faith, business, life, his marriage. And we end up staying connected after the event. So the event ends. He gives me his business card. You know, I think I'll probably never see this guy again, but what the heck? Well, turns out Jeff is the CEO of this transportation logistics company. And he does all, you know, he does logistics for the Olympics and NASCAR and NBA sporting events and like all of these different things. And so I think, man, this is a really good guy to know. So I stay in contact with him. And about a year and a half later, he calls me at the oil and gas company where I was working at the time in Oklahoma City. And he says, hey, the guy that was running the helicopter logistics division of our business, working with our NASCAR client base, he's leaving. Would you want to move to Orlando and, you know, take over the reins for what he was doing? And so prayed about it for a few days and ultimately decided to pack up my life and move to Orlando. Since moving to Orlando, I mean, that was really the spark that led me down the path of starting my own business, getting to work for an entrepreneur, seeing what a small business was like. I didn't even know what the word entrepreneur meant before working for Jeff. Obviously, you know, I met my wife after moving to Orlando. So my entire life changed because of this single relationship with Jeff. And so as I started thinking about, you know, a one single relationship changed my entire life here on earth. What would it look like to try to reverse engineer the perfect relationship? And what would it look like for you to be able to reverse engineer multiple relationships that could change the trajectory of your life? And so whenever I started Sweetfish, I was trying to figure out who our ideal client was. And I thought at first that it was going to be church planters, because we had a client of ours that was a church planter, and we were doing some really great blog work for that particular client. And I thought, man, we could do this for every church plant in America. And so my buddy and I started a podcast called Plant Better, and we reached out to 100 different church planters who we had zero relationship with, and 80 of them responded and said, yeah, sure, I'd love to be a guest on your show. And that was, for me, I was like, okay, I've been doing this marketing thing for a little bit, and I don't know that I've ever gotten an 80% response rate on anything I've ever done. And so This whole like asking your ideal clients to be a guest on your show thing, I think this could work. So it turns out church plants don't have any money for content marketing, which was our service, but we quickly pivoted into figuring out, man, if we could do this podcasting thing for companies that have product market fit that are selling to other businesses, this could really go somewhere. So we pivoted into becoming a podcast agency for B2B brands and started B2B Growth, which is our flagship show now, and that gets over 100,000 downloads a month. And we use that show as a mechanism to build relationships with the exact people that we want to know. And so in our context, we are trying to interview VPs of marketing at B2B tech companies with 50 plus employees. That's our ideal buyer. And so that's who we reach out to and ask to be a guest on our show. And so we've started calling the methodology content-based networking. Obviously wrote a book around it, but that's really the background and the story of why I thought the book needed to come to life.
Yeah. My association with James is I read the book. That's not even a good description. I devoured the book. I kid you not. I read the book in one night. I didn't want to order it any other way than Kindle so I could get my hands on it. And I read it and I immediately took action. In fact, you know, I hope I didn't embarrass James by going too fanboy, but I started Brand Rounds podcast after I read his book, after I use word for word reaching out to people. And it was a shift for me. For those of you who are listening, and James, to put this into context, literally brain surgeons, spine surgeons, heart surgeons, medical device distributors, innovative medical designers. What James' book provided for me was the big idea of flipping the megaphone to someone else, letting them share their insight and knowledge. And so that was huge. So James, I would say that was my key take-home message that I applied to our agency. Now, what's one or two key take-home messages that you want the specialty audience that is listening to us today to receive from your book?
Well, one, I think, is to just get started. That was something that I pounded home a lot in the book. I think so many people think, you know, well, the people that I would want to feature on my show aren't going to say yes. They wouldn't be interested. And I would say, you don't know until until you try. And so many people, they reach out to maybe one or two people and they, you know, don't get a reply, and then they never send a follow-up email. And so they end up letting this strategy that's literally changed my life just pass them by because they didn't have the courage to just get started and do it. Send 100 emails to people that you want to know, and I can almost guarantee you that at least, you know, 15 or 20 of them are going to get back to you saying, yes, I'd love to be a guest on your show. So get started. And then I love what you did, Matthew, in getting really specific and granular with the type of people that you want to be on your show. If you're trying to do a podcast that reaches the masses, it's a really hard and long journey to figure out how do you create content that everyone on the planet wants to listen to. It's really hard to go the Joe Rogan path. And when you think about how Joe Rogan did it, he came with an existing audience because he'd been doing stand-up comedy for years. He had hosted Fear Factor. He had the UFC stuff going on. So he brought an audience with him into the podcast. So many people, they're so worried about niching down, like what you've done, Matthew, because they think, oh, well, I could help all these other people, but I'm leaving those opportunities on the table because, this niche focus. But the reality is, like, everybody, you know, will tell you in marketing, if you don't focus in niche, you're not going to be special to anybody. And so I think those are my two biggest ones. Get started and don't be afraid to niche down and focus your content on the exact type of people that you want to reach.
Speak to the person who says, I'm not sure that I understand the definition of podcasting, and then connect the dots to the person that is listening to us saying, James, podcasting's not new.
So I think... Oh man. Podcasting has been around for years and years and years. Shows like Serial have done a phenomenal job of bringing kind of widespread awareness to the platform. And podcasting is essentially radio, but it's on demand radio. So you don't have to, you know, there's ads, but you can easily kind of fast forward through ads. There's lots of different platforms where you can listen to podcasts on your phone or in your car. So Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts are the big ones. And I think, I think it's such an approachable platform because it allows you to communicate with your audience while they are doing other things. So it allows people to passively consume your content while they're mowing the lawn, while they're doing dishes, while they're on the subway on the way to work, and they'll spend a long amount of time with you. Whereas with your blog content or your micro videos on social, or just your social media posts, they're spending, you know, 15, 30 seconds, maybe a minute on your content. With a podcast, you know, if you're doing, you know, 15 to 20 minute episodes, they're spending 20 times that amount of time consuming your content. And so I just think it's a platform that every single brand, especially in the B2B space, the folks that you're serving, Matthew, I think podcasting is such a fantastic channel to communicate with the people that they want to be communicating with.
It is. The portability of podcasting is amazing. It's not just reserved for working out. It's reserved for on demand. It's literally virtual time shifted content. And I think that's the big idea. And so, James, you know, the State Farm commercial, you gotta know the State Farm commercial where the husband, it's late at night. He's talking to the State Farm agent. The wife comes down the steps and goes, "Who are you speaking to?" Do you know which one I'm talking about?
I do.
True story. Sweet Sandy will vouch for me. I go to bed early because I'm old, James. I'm very old. And I go to bed early and I've been playing your B2B podcast. And between you and your co-host, you know, and Sweet Sandy goes, "Who are you listening to?" It was a State Farm commercial. "Who are you listening to?" I'm like, "James from Sweetfish Media." And the next scene, this was last night. And I almost expected her to pick up my phone and go, "What are you wearing, James from Sweetfish Media?" It was almost one of those moments. So I just want to let you know that.
Oh, I love that story.
Yeah, I mentioned Sweetfish Media. Describe it to me or our listeners as if we're on a treadmill running full speed. So describe Sweetfish Media so that we can instantly or in as little time as possible understand the value that it provides.
Yeah, so we are traditionally an agency. So we have decided to double down our niche. So instead of just niching down and saying, you know, we produce podcasts, we've really doubled down and said, we don't just produce podcasts, but we produce podcasts specifically for B2B SaaS companies. Those are the bulk of our clients, and we've gotten really good at it. So we do all of the, you know, the audio production, obviously, but then we also do a lot of the pre-production stuff. So helping you find guests that are also ideal buyers for you, reaching out to those guests, getting them scheduled, and then on the back end, repurposing the content into lots of different types of content as well. So, you know, whether that's micro videos or audiograms or blog posts or graphics, it's just a lot of work to do a podcast well and to really get to squeeze all the juice out of it that you can. And so, so we've got a team of creatives and producers that help make the process really easy for companies that want to do that.
Yeah, I provided for you an overview of our listening audience. It's diverse, intelligent, insightful, and I find that our audience is very responsive. So you're speaking to brain surgeons, spine surgeons, heart surgeons, and there's this one core audience called medical sales distributorships. They made a pivot from being intrapreneurial, working for large manufacturing companies, to entrepreneurial. I want you to speak to them. They're bringing in several million dollars a year. They're a hidden gem. They're technicians at the operating room. They are one part McKinsey consulting, one part, you know, ultimate consummate sales professional. What is it that you could share about podcasting that might make them curious to learn more?
Yeah, so I think more so than podcasting, it's this idea of becoming a media property. And I think when you think of yourself as a media company first, like Gary Vee says, think of yourself like a media company first, then whatever it is you do. And when you flip that and you think, how can I become Forbes or Business Insider for my ideal buyer? So for the medical distributorship that is thinking through, you know, who does our product, who does our medical device serve the best? Is it this particular type of brain surgeon or spinal surgeon? And get really granular with the specific type of person that your product serves. And then think to yourself, how can I create the most helpful resource on the internet, an ongoing show, whether it's, you know, a LinkedIn video series or a podcast or something that you do for YouTube? It doesn't necessarily have to be a podcast. If writing is your thing, it could be a series of blog posts where you interview these medical professionals in the niche that you're in and feature them in blog content as well. But regardless of whatever the content channel is, you're thinking of yourself as a media company and you're trying to create the most helpful content on the internet for that specific type of buyer. And the way that you're going to do that is not by talking about your product or yourself or your expertise. How you're going to do that is by shining your spotlight, like you alluded to earlier, Matthew, on them. So if you want to attract neurosurgeons, you starting the Neurosurgeon podcast and interviewing every neurosurgeon on the planet is going to be a much faster path to you establishing credibility than you just getting on a podcast and talking about your product and your expertise all day, every day. Because if you're talking to neurosurgeons about their challenges, about the things that are getting them excited, about the opportunities that they're, you know, about to jump into, then that is actually going to be way more helpful to other neurosurgeons who are then going to find the show, start listening to it, and you get to absorb the credibility from each of the guests that you're coming on. So in the book, I tell the story of Oprah. You know, Oprah's got an incredible backstory, but that's not why she's famous. Oprah is famous because she has shined her spotlight on really famous people, and her interview style and the way she's able to be so vulnerable and authentic in the way that she has these conversations with Tom Cruise and all these big names, that has been what has made her famous. So she has really borrowed the credibility of all of these super famous people that she's interviewed over the years, and now she's more famous than most of the people she interviewed or she used to interview. I don't even think she does a show anymore. So all that to say, you can do the same thing. You can be the Oprah in your industry if you are willing to shine the spotlight on the exact people that you're trying to serve, as opposed to, you know, just talking about yourself and your product all the time.
You know, one of the things that when I speak with people in our listening audience, they have a hang up, or to borrow a Stephen Pressfield term, they feel resistance as it relates to understanding how to interview someone. How would you briefly explain to a healthcare professional, these are the simple ingredients for a great podcast interview?
Yeah, I think being curious is something that is, you know, then that's a tough one, right? Because it's like, how can I can't snap my fingers and just be more curious. Preparation helps a ton. So going in, if you've got your intro kind of scripted out, and we've got a standard intro that we use, you know, it's welcome back to B2B Growth. We're here today with, you know, John Smith. He's the founder of XYZ Corp. John, how you doing today? And just having that simple intro, it gets us started so that we can have a more natural conversation. I didn't used to do a lot of interview prep in the early days of the show. What I would do is I would just bring somebody on and then I would say, you know, hey, so-and-so, you know, what would be 3 to 5 tangible takeaways that you want our listeners to walk away with after hearing this episode? And then I would just, you know, we're not recording at this point. So I would just jot down what their 3 to 5 takeaways were, and I would, you know, proceed, you know, we'd hit record and I would basically just tee them up to talk about those 3 to 5 things. Now we're a little bit more strategic, and before we go into the episode, we're looking at what are specific keywords. Like we go to Google and we look for the auto suggest results based on words related to the guest's expertise or something that we've seen them post on social where we know they have a lot to talk about. And so we start using what we call Google Alphabet Soup. And so we'll put in a phrase and then we'll hit the letter A in Google and see what pops up in auto suggest. And then we'll hit the letter B and the letter C. And we figure out like, okay, these are our different topics that we want to make sure that we cover on the show. This person could probably talk about this particular topic. And so we go through and we do some competitive research to figure out what are the things being talked about in the articles that are ranking on the first page of Google for this specific topic. And then we frame our questions for our guests around that content. But I would say don't get tripped up in that. I mean, it took us 1,000, maybe 1,200 episodes before we got to where we were that thoughtful in our planning. We built hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of relationships just by doing what I mentioned first, which is, you know, asking someone to be a guest on the show, asking, you know, telling them who your audience is, and then saying, you know, hey, what are the 3 to 5 tangible takeaways you want somebody to walk away with after listening to this episode? It is that simple. I mean, it's a 5-minute process. And then start your interview with your intro and get right into teeing that person up to share each of their 3 to 5 actionable takeaways. And by doing that, you're going to end up creating content that people actually want to consume because it's actionable and tangibly helpful for them.
Yeah, that's really helpful. I had mentioned that I was grateful that when I read your book, I immediately began to do what you taught us. I started to reach out to people. And what I would say to our listening audience is that for those of you who might say, well, yeah, but James and Matthew, you guys have interviewed some very popular people. It's easy for you to say. But what I want to share with the listening audience is that 6 weeks ago, I didn't have a podcast. I barely knew how to press record. I just took what James taught us in the book, and I reached out to people, some of whom are popular people, and they said yes. And I think they said yes in part because it's a niche audience. You're a neurosurgeon, orthopedic surgeon, innovative product development manager. And I think for those people that we interview, they find that to be very interesting. You're an interesting audience. And so it's a segue. One of the big ideas that you provided for me, James, that I want to make sure and have you touch on as we begin to conclude this podcast is that while grateful for interviewing the Gary V's, you teach us that coworkers and clients, even people from other industries, they're often the most impactful interview. Why is that?
I think that, you know, so many people get caught up in wanting to interview these famous people. And they think that by interviewing these famous people, it's going to somehow explode the size of their audience. But the reality is famous people are famous for a reason, because they put out an enormous amount of content themselves. And so they don't necessarily have the time to share your content with their audience, and nor they should. They shouldn't. I mean, they've got their own content that they're promoting. And so three of the biggest names that we've had on B2B Growth, we've had Gary Vee, we've had Simon Sinek, we've had this guy named Noah Kagan, who's really big in kind of the entrepreneur land. And all three of those, when you look at those episodes, they are some of our least downloaded episodes in our, you know, in our backlog of 1600 episodes. And that's not surprising to me at all, because those people have their own content that they're trying to share with their audience. And so I can't expect them to share my content with their audience. And even if they did, the likelihood that I would be able to pull, you know, any significant number of people from their audience over to me is very little. You know, maybe they tweet about it. Maybe they put something on LinkedIn about it. But that's going to be very rare. And instead, if you are interviewing people that are in the trenches in the industry that you're trying to serve, that are practitioners, that are doing this stuff day in, day out, they are going to have content that is much more resonant with other types of people that you're trying to reach. So, you know, and certainly you can talk to the big, you know, the big name influencers. They became influencers because they do have quality content, but so many people get tripped up and focused on making that the only type of person they're going after. And they're missing all of the individual relationships that they could be building with guests that are practitioners in the industry, and also decision makers, people that could actually buy your product or service. So we've grown our agency. You know, we're a seven-figure agency now that employs 20 people, because the backbone of our strategy is interviewing our ideal buyers and creating great content with our ideal buyers, these VPs of marketing at B2B tech companies. And it's through those relationships that we've ultimately built a really nice business that supports the lives of 20 people. And so I speak from this actually being my experience, and from me seeing firsthand that it works.
Yeah, I love that. And what a big idea for the medical sales distributorships that are listening to us, which is that you've taught us to reach out and even given us text messages or a communication framework to respectfully ask somebody to share their insight. So you interview all of these interesting people. You return to work on Monday. I love the idea that when you learn from so many people from interviewing them, how that impacts your business. In your case, how these ideas impact Sweetfish Media. Briefly unpack that for us. I think it's something that falls under the simple but not obvious category.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you realize really quickly whenever you start doing this that not only are you stacking up genuine relationship after genuine relationship, because you're interviewing your ideal buyer about what makes them come alive, about their challenges, about the industry from their point of view. In that interview process, you're building all of these great relationships, but what you're also doing is you're learning how they think, how they talk, the words they use, and that then carries into your next conversation. And so you're stacking all of this, all of these relationships, but you're also stacking all of this knowledge and insight. And before you know it, you're going to look up and people are calling you a thought leader in this industry that you may have known nothing about 3 or 4 months prior. So when we started B2B Growth, I knew nothing about B2B marketing. I mean, I didn't have a background in B2B marketing. I just happened to build a service that would be most helpful to a B2B marketer. But after interviewing hundreds of B2B marketers, I ended up knowing a thing or two about B2B marketing. And when you can empathize with your buyer because you've talked to so many of them and you've become friends with so many of them, they see you as a peer instead of somebody that's just selling them something. And that shift in their mind is huge. And the way you get to that shift is actually having a comprehensive understanding of, you know, their fears and their hopes and their dreams and their challenges and the trends in their profession. And you only do that by having lots of conversations with them.
A lot of our listeners will be traveling through Orlando for business or for meetings. Where do I eat so that when I come back home, that it was off the beaten path, it was wonderful enough that I share with my friends who may not know that that's a spot to go to in Orlando.
Gosh. So there is this really quirky barbecue spot called Yellow Dog Eats. And Yellow Dog Eats is in Gotha, Florida. So it's a little bit off the beaten path, but I used to live like right behind Yellow Dog Eats, and we would go there all the time. I think the USA Today said that it was the best place to eat in Orlando. My wife would argue and say that Four Rivers is better. It's another barbecue place in Orlando, but I would say I'm just going to have to go with Yellow Dog Eats there. There's also a place over by Universal called Junior Columbia Burger. It is a hole in the wall, but it is one of the best burgers you'll ever put in your mouth.
And my final question is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how dismayed or angry are you that Lululemon chose me as the plus size model spokesperson for the states of Oklahoma and Arkansas?
I am not disappointed at all. I can't think of a more appropriate model for Lululemon than you.
Yeah, I just wanted to get that out in the public in case our listeners were concerned that was a rift between you and I. Just want to throw that out there. But hey, James, I appreciate it. You know, in closing, I'm grateful for your time. Your insight that you provided for us is really going to help our entrepreneurial practitioners. Your book, it's so well written that you can apply, unlike a lot of books, you can immediately put into action what James is teaching. And I think that's the ultimate compliment of a book, which is you read it, you do it, you benefit from it. And so just on behalf of our listening audience, I want to say thank you for all that you're doing.
Thank you so much, Matthew. This has been a blast. I really appreciate you having me on the show, man.